This is a recording of my conversation with Rosaria Filippo, principal data scientist at NIME. We discussed the recent history of the practice of machine learning, starting with some of the early 90s applications to the most promising use cases of today and tomorrow. We also cover innovation with machine learning, automated machine learning and its limitations, and challenges with deploying machine learning models at scale. I'm talking to Rosaria Filippo, principal data scientist at NIME. NIME is a Zurich-based open-source data analytics platform. I have known Rosaria for some time as a practitioner of data science and plan to cover a wider range of topics. Rosaria, welcome. Please introduce yourself and NIME.
Hi, everybody. So I work as an evangelist at NIME. NIME is a company based in Zurich. And we produce data analytics software, data science, now it's called software. We have two products. One is the NIME Analytics platform is open source, and the other one is the server is for license.
How did you start with the data science? What were some of the first applications you worked on?
So I've been working in data science for a very, very, very long time. So I started in 1992 with my master's thesis. But then, let's say professionally, the first project I worked on was a churn prediction that was a classic at that time. We were supposed to analyze data from CRM systems. Those were the data that they most widely available at the time. And then based on the CRM data of our customers, we were supposed, for example, to find the probability of churning, to produce a customer segmentation for a campaign management, to find the likelihood of upselling.
At that time, data science was not very well known. When did the data science start to move into mainstream?
So at that time, in the 90s, it was not even called data science. It was data analytics. It changed name, I think, around the 2010, something like that. The big jump happened with the web 2.0, right? Because all the companies, Facebook came out, Twitter. So they all started to have text and people talking to each other and lots of conversations recorded. And then, of course, all the review business came out, the TripAdvisor came out, all these movie reviews, websites. So even there, you had tons of text and you could analyze these texts to see what people were thinking about a product, what people were thinking about a movie, what would be their preference, I don't know, for example, for the ending of a movie, these kind of things. So at that time, the text processing had a huge jump. The network analytics had a huge jump, and especially it was the time for the recommendation engines. The recommendation engines, they address recommendations for people in a supermarket, right, in a retail store. You have a basket full of goods, and then they would give you additional recommendations. But then with these review websites, a new algorithm came out that, based on your ranking profile, would give you recommendations based on what people with a similar ranking profiles would like.
Moving on to present times, what are some of the best applications you have seen recently?
In the present time, a lot is based on deep learning. Deep learning is the big new jump in the data science as a horizontal technology, so it's applied on many different fields. Something that I have seen, for example, that is kind of common now, for example, is the analysis of anomaly detection and of fraud detection. This is a new big topic. It's interesting because it allows you to change the perspective from the original CRISP-DM cycle. So the original projects, you would collect your data, you would prepare your data, you would train the model, you would test the model. Then if everything was good, you would deploy the model. So in this, the fraud detection or the anomaly detection, you have that one of the classes is missing, and then you need to think a bit different on how to make use of the only one class you have and still do an acceptably good prediction. Another big class of projects that have been popular in the past years are all the projects related to natural language processing. With the introduction of the LSTM unit, the long short-term memory unit. Since the long short-term memory units, they take into account the context of the input, so that means they remember the past, then language was one of the natural applications for these kind of networks. When you talk, one word is important depending on the context you insert the word in. So, of course, if you do some analysis of text or of the language, considering that as a sequence of words, then the application of the LSTM units was a big thing. And then, of course, image processing. The first project that gave popularity to deep learning was a project on image processing. It was this face recognition project. I have to say one of the good things of this face recognition project was that before, neural networks were always criticized because they didn't allow for interpretability of the model. They were considered the black box models. And then I think with the face recognition project, with the correctness of the results on large amount of data, then of course this non-interpretability of the model became secondary. I've worked on some of those recently. So one, for example, on using the LSTM units, we have worked on some free text generation process. Yeah, we, for example, developed some engine that could create rap songs or Shakespearean text or things like that. It was kind of fun.
As the company is now looking to deploying machine learning, there is discussion around automating machine learning. What do you think is the potential and the limitations of automating machine learning?
As I said, classic data science project. So when you build, for example, a churn prediction model, one of the super classic problems, then you would have, as I said, collect the data, prepare the data, train the model, test the model, and then maybe move into deployment. So those are kind of standard steps. Maybe you throw in there an optimization phase, something like that, but they are all kind of standard steps. They have been optimized and run for many, many years. So we know what we are doing. We know what we want to get as output. As long as the data is clean enough, probably it's something that we can develop quickly via some kind of repetitive approach. The question is, of course, when you talk about these problems, can I automate that? Since it's all standard and all repetitive, can I automate that? So I would say yes, as long as the problem is easy, the data is clean, and you know exactly what you want to get as output. However, since real life is always more complicated than the life that you expect, then sometimes the data is dirty. Sometimes the data is not, the classes are not distributed equally. Sometimes you miss completely one of the classes because they haven't been recorded or because it was impossible to record one of them. Sometimes the data is too big, sometimes, so there are a lot of sometimes. And then in these cases, you have to be careful about what you're feeding the automated machine learning algorithm with. Even worse, if you don't know what you want to get as a result, you're going to risk to interpret what the model gives you as the correct probabilities for your problem, and maybe they don't fit, they don't correspond. So as soon as the problem becomes slightly more complicated, then in my opinion, a bit of the expert intervention is necessary. The expert knows, for example, which kind of data preparation has to be applied, which kind of data cleaning has to be applied, which kind of model, which kind of tuning to the model is most successful, which kind of testing, how to interpret the results. So there are a lot of things where the expert can contribute as soon as the problem becomes bigger.
Changing gears slightly, what could be the innovative role of AI?
In the past, AI, also or data analytics as it was called at that time, you had a problem, you had classes, you were supposed to teach the model to predict one of the classes, right? So, and that was a kind of a defined problem. So some kind of a prediction that also the humans can do. But something that I've seen recently and I found it fascinating is that you can, for example, you can teach a network to produce words, so to produce text, to put together a text like a human would be. You can use a network to produce new names for a new product line, for example. So those are traditionally creative tasks. So we taught, for example, a network that was a deep learning network, and we taught the network to... We trained it on mountain names and we taught the network to create fake new mountain names. And this is something that can be done in 10 seconds. It gives you 200 candidates of new mountain names, and it's a relatively creative process. So something that so far we thought that only humans could do and machine could not do. So and the other thing is this example that I've said about creating rap songs. It sounds believable. It doesn't make always sense, also because probably we haven't trained it long enough, but it actually sounds believable. At some point, if you give it enough past, the network can also learn to rhyme.
Understand. So what are some of the challenges in deploying data science at scale?
Deployment is the complicated phase for a few reasons. So one reason is that somehow the original design of the application is not working. Something was not considered, the specs were not correct, and then all these problems that we don't see in the lab when we train the network, they all come out in the deployment. For example, we didn't respect the privacy, so we trained with names and last names or something like that, and then suddenly when we are in the real world, names and last names cannot be used anymore because of privacy laws, and then we have to start again, right? And then the whole specs were incorrect. Another problem that I often see in let's say, projects that die at deployment is that the real world is more complicated than the lab world. So everything that we thought was working in the lab, somehow it doesn't fit in the real world. There are governance constraints, the privacy constraints, as I've said before, some law constraints. There are some priority constraints by the management team. So this is another problem. And then, of course, a classic problem of that you see in deployment is the data leakage. You use data for training that are actually not available at the moment, so as input when you run the model in the real world. So, for example, you use data. They are in the data set, but these data are acquired after the event has been observed. So in this case, of course, you have it in the training set because everything has been recorded in the same database, but then when you move into production in the real world, this field is not available anymore because it's recorded after.
Now, moving on to NIME, what specific problem does NIME solve? Could you share some interesting examples, applications?
So NIME is an horizontal software, so it can be applied to everything that is data. So it has all functionalities from reading your data, transforming your data, machine learning algorithms to train, testing measures, optimization procedures, so and deployment, of course. So it covers the whole chain of a data science project. It's used a lot in the life sciences, for example, but it's used a lot also in financial data, in automotive data. So it's definitely, it covers all possible data. It's not necessarily covering only numerical data. We have some extensions also for text processing, some extensions for image processing, for the chemistry data. So there are extensions for everything. It's open source, as I said, so you can just download it and start using it. And there are many advantages to the fact that it's open source. And one of the advantages is the community. So since it's free and there is a huge community behind it, you can always find nodes and components and functionalities, developed extensions, developed by other people in the community that you can then use for your own type, special type of data.
Rosaria, final question. In addition to creativity that you mentioned, what are some other promising developments that you see in AI?
For sure, there will be more attention to health data analysis. Data analysis for health systems. There will be more attention also, for example, to the analysis of the ecosystem, pollution analysis and this kind of chemistry analysis to improve our ecosystem. There will be a more massive production of what has now become standard analysis using deep learning, for example, some image processing. I think another big thing that is going to happen in the next years is that since all these data analysis processes are going to become standard, there will be more attention to the deployment part because at the end you need to move all these data, all these models into deployment. One more thing, another thing that I think it's going to happen to have a lot of relevance in the next years is the automated labeling of data. So what happened in the past years, everybody was collecting data. They had a sensor system, so they decided to collect data from every point of their chain in the company, for example, or something like that. A lot of companies have a lot of data, but they are not labeled. Not labeled means that they either develop custom algorithm to analyze this data, something that is based on their domain knowledge and it fits that particular problem, or they use unsupervised techniques. Unsupervised techniques, they only go that far, or they decide to label the data. To label the data means to spend a lot of money and a lot of time because you have to hire somebody, and if this somebody has to be an expert, for example, in medical data, it costs a lot of money. So now there are these new techniques that are coming out about active learning and automated labeling. So these weak supervision techniques that allow you to label automatically the data just starting by a small, tiny subset manually labeled. So you label only some of the data and then you let the algorithm extend the labeling to the rest of the data. So that's probably another direction for the next years.
Rosaria, this was great. Thank you very much.